What up, world? It's episode 100, or as my man Drizzy likes to say, 100. I can't believe we're right here, but a few things I wanted to do was to thank you all for supporting me throughout this journey. It's been an amazing journey. It's been over a year now where we've been doing this for 100 episodes. Can you believe it? 100 episodes. So when I initially started this, I wanted to sort of have a voice out there, give third culture kids, nomads, and people that identify with several cultures a platform to share their stories. Because it's my belief that in order to build the next set of global leaders, the right set of global leaders, we have to have people that know how to communicate across cultures. So I thought, you know, me being someone that tends to identify with several cultures, why don't I create a platform for several others, you know, third culture kids, TCKs, global nomads, international businessmen, to come share their stories and really educate the world and what the world outside Western media was and is. And it's been an incredible journey. I didn't know what I was doing when I initially started it. I sort of just had this dream, and you guys have kept me going. I can't honestly tell you how much and how uplifting your words are when, you know, when you leave a review or when you send me an email or just when you send me a nice tweet, right? And for that, I am eternally grateful because of you. You know, we've been able to go to conferences to speak at. There's been a TCK book that's been released that's doing well on Amazon. And there's just been so many platforms. Because of you, you guys, the fans, UID was launched. It was initially the success of the podcast that led to me thinking that I should, you know, open up the platform to other people to write and share stories. And now UIDmedia.com or UIDmag.com, depending on whatever one you go, they all go to the same place, has been a success. And it's, you know, has over 60 writers. And I guess this video and this intro is just to thank you and to say I honestly would not be doing this or be here without your support. So for today's episode, I felt like I should answer a lot of the questions that I've been getting. A lot of people wanted to know, well, who makes Tayo Tayo? Who makes the Roxen family? You know, what's the behind the scenes like? So with this episode, I decided to go behind the scenes and have the people that know me best really, you know, and do an interview with them. So on this episode, you hear my mother, the most beautiful woman in the world, first of all, the most supportive woman, and also the most amazing mom. I do understand that I'm biased, but I think my bias is right in this case. You dig? But my mom's on this episode, and I've got my two younger brothers, Deli Roxen, who is the middle child. He is 24 years old. He's going to hate me for saying that, because actually, I always say he's a year younger than he is, but he's 24. He's turning 25 this year. And I've got my youngest brother who's 16, the genius of the family. So you get to hear their stories. You get to hear some of the ways we interacted growing up and how we adjusted to all the moves in the 5 countries and 4 continents. Another thing that I've been getting asked a lot is, why did I decide to launch the podcast in the first place? So I will go ahead and tell the story now. I know I've shared it on a few podcast episodes, but I don't know who's sort of seen what. So I was sitting at an event that Arena Huffington was hosting. It was called Thrive. And it was a book tour for her, you know, her book. And it was a 3-day conference or a 2-day conference, I forget. And, you know, she made a comment about her accent. She has a strong Greek accent. And she said at one point in her life she had wanted to change it so she could be more understood. And for some reason, you know, she meant it as a joke. But for some reason, that resonated with me. And then I wrote the title of what will become my first ebook, The Ultimate Guide to TCK Living, right then and there. And I asked myself this question. I wonder if there's a platform out there for people who look like they're not supposed to sound and sound like they're not supposed to look, me being one of them. I changed my accent several times as a survival tool, so I was like, you know, I wonder if there's a voice out there for them. And it just reminded me of this BuzzFeed article I had read, you know, like 31 signs you're a third culture kid. And that was my first encounter with the word TCK, or Third Culture Kid. And I said, why don't I create a podcast or a platform for people to share their stories? Because I honestly feel that there are a lot of questions that need that we all have as TCKs and people who are citizens of the world, and we can probably get to the root of some of those answers through community. So I reached out to a lot of people on Twitter who I saw were TCKs, and I asked, hey, would you, I'm thinking of launching this podcast, would you think of being a guest? And lo and behold, that became, As Told by Nomads. And from then on, through your comments and success, it became As Told by Nomads, and I decided to launch UID Media, and that's the story with that. But the community and that's been built since then has been something that I am forever grateful for. I call all you my UIDers, because all of you are amazing, and you all keep me going even when I felt like I didn't know what I was doing. So I appreciate all your suggestions, all your emails, all the messages you leave, and I just want to say thank you. We made it happen. 100 episodes. A few housekeeping items before I dive into the episode. So, many of you know, for us to continue to be ranked high on iTunes, it depends on your reviews, guys. So please leave as many reviews and 5-star ratings as you can. It's As Told by Nomads on iTunes, As Told by Nomads on Stitcher, where I think we're at like 130 reviews now. Let's try and get it to 250. 250. Just asking for 120. It really takes only 30 seconds. So just, hop on your iTunes or Stitcher, leave a review. Would absolutely love that. And, be grateful from the bottom of my heart, if I can find it. The bottom of my heart. Right. Yeah. There. And the other thing is, there's an active Facebook group for UID and As Told by Nomads. It's called Use Your Difference to Make a Difference. Just search that and, I'll approve you. And we have weekly conversations about certain things that we wanted to talk about off the podcast. And, this is an engaging community that I'm building. Absolutely love to have you all there. And many of you know, you can reach me on Twitter at TyroXen, or you can reach me by email, TyroXen@UIDMag.com. TayroCKSON at UIDMag.com. And say hi, leave a message, suggest a guest. And if you just want to jump on a stat, just let me know. And the last thing is, I have taken advice, and a lot of the suggestions that you guys have been giving me is to launch my own product, launch my own services. We want to hear more of you, Tyro. So I've gotten a few opportunities in the past year, and I am taking heed to all your advice, all your pieces of advice. So I've started consulting with a few companies. So if you're a company, you're looking to find your call, you work with your millennials who identify with several cultures and help them find the culture of fit, holler at your boy. If you're an international student or a school that's looking to incorporate your international students into their environment seamlessly and understand the process of what it's like to fit in, holler at your boy. And the other thing is, if you're trying to figure out how to deal with the diversity of millennials and you're a Gen X or you're a baby boomer, and you're a company, you want to sort of find that bridge between that, holla at your boy, TyroXen. So I'm doing that more and more, and it's been going well so far. So thank you all. With that being said, the episode will begin. If you're watching on YouTube, the link to the episode of this podcast, it's down below. If you listen to the podcast, all you need to do is stay tuned because it's coming up in like 30 seconds. And if you listen to the Facebook group, click the link like the YouTube guys and you catch the rest of the episode. But till then, see you next week. See you next time. I love you all. 100 episodes! I can't believe I did it!
I'm out of here. Pow!
Got my mom and my youngest brother on the show. What's up, mom?
Hi, Tayo.
How you doing? Tunde, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Good, good, good. Okay, so I'm going to get right into it, but I'll be going back and forth between you guys. But I want to start from the very beginning. October 30, 1989. What was that day like for you?
Me? I was anxious. Me, the first time, I was very, very scared. It was very, very scary. And I wanted everything to be perfect. I have read so many books on how to deliver safely. And, you know, so it's like, if I see any sign, I want to check myself into the hospital. You know, the nurses, they were laughing. Say, oh, it's going to be all right. We have a date that we're giving you. I said, no, I want to be there. So, you know.
Okay. And then I came back. What kind of baby was I?
Oh, tall. And you are very tall. People were saying, oh, the boy is tall. He's tall. So from that moment, I knew that you're going to be a tall person.
And then I remember you telling me stories about me being a troublemaker, very energetic, very restless.
Yeah. No, not really trouble. You are like, I think your Superman something started at that age. Because you wanted to do the impossible. You like to do everything with me. You follow me everywhere, you know, the toilet, because it's just me and you, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Because dad used to be very busy, right? He was always at work. So it was me and you initially. Okay. And then when did you find out that you were moving to Sweden? Because that was, you know, almost a year after, I think.
No, yes. I think a few months after you closed the age one. So okay. We moved to Sweden.
And were you pregnant then? Were you pregnant with Dilly when you moved to Sweden?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, because Dilly was born in Sweden. So, okay, what was that move like? Because I don't know if you had traveled out of Nigeria at that point, yeah, but when Daddy told you...
Yeah, I've traveled before.
Okay, so when Dad said, we're moving to Sweden, what was the first thing that came to your mind?
Came to my mind.
Yeah.
I was excited for you. Because I said that, oh, this boy, oh my God, I'm going to take him everywhere, Disney World, and this and this and that. That was just, I said, I'm going to spoil this, but I will take him everywhere. I will show him the world.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then you got
very, very.
So you're excited. You thought your son was going to be like a worldly kid. Was,
you know, you're my friend that time. So I said, oh, this boy, we are doing everything together. I'm taking you everywhere. I'm buying all the toys in the whole world for you.
okay. Then you finally landed in Sweden, and then what was that like? Because I don't remember. That's one of the countries I don't remember. That's the only country I don't remember really anything tell you, from.
It was strange at first because the weather was very cold.
Uh huh.
I think we arrived during the springtime, and so it was a different weather.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, the next available shop, I'm going to buy hoodie, cardigan, and every. I was concerned about you feeling cold, but you didn't even show any different. You didn't show any sign at all. You just looking at everybody. You are excited to meet people. You are looking at people even in the plane. Looking at people. Why are you here? Why do you have so many people in the? You know, that kind of stuff. You know.
I remember one of the stories you were telling me. You were telling me I used to stand out on the outside and point at people and say, "Amen."
Yes. You know that time, okay, what I told you earlier on that day, I wanted to tell you everything at that age. I wanted to show you everything. So there was a book I bought. Okay? Mm-hmm. That book, I taught you a boy, a girl, and this and that and that. So immediately, anytime I'm in the kitchen, you know the kitchen is facing, it's an estate, it's a very reserved area. Mm-hmm. So where you see, if anybody is moving, the type of house we have, we had a big house.
Mm-hmm.
So and the kitchen is at the... like on the second floor. Mm-hmm. So when I'm cooking, you go everywhere with me. So that time, there's a table in the kitchen very close to the window.
Right.
So anytime I'm cooking there, you are looking at whoever is coming. If you see a boy, you say, "Hey boy." If you see a guy, you say, "Hey guy." Like you are practicing what I taught you. Hey boy, a guy. You know that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, keep quiet. I said, no, a boy, a woman, a guy. You know, it's like everything in the book. If you see it, you just start saying it.
Just so I mean, so you're saying I was very inquisitive. I always wanted to practice what I learned, but
you always wanted to practice, and you like reading, uh-huh. And it's like you wanted to anything you see in the book. You believe that you have to see that in real life, so you'll be walking up and down like that. So I was very happy to know that you know you learned so many things at the early age.
But then Dilly came out, and then I'm sure the dynamic was different because me and you were very close. We were doing everything, and then you had Dilly. Dilly came out, and
everything, what was that like? Changed. Everything changed. inside the hospital. Immediately you saw me with a baby. You at that time you thought it was a toy, right? So you came to me. You know when you came, you when I left for the hospital, you were staying with your dad. It was a Christmas time on the 30th of December. So immediately I delivered, I told your daddy to bring you. You understand? Mm-hmm. So immediately you came and said, "Oh, tired, I was tired." You were coming, and when you saw the baby, you said, oh, no way. This is not my mom. You know, I said, so I said, Tayo, come and meet your brother. Come and meet your brother. You said, no. You just, from that time, you transfer everything to your dad. It's like, no way. You're not my friend again. So I was like, what is wrong? But later on, you came around. You were playing with him, you know. That time, I used to buy the same clothes for you people. When I saw that behavior, I started buying the same shirt, the same pants, the same toothbrush, the same color, everything uh-huh. the same. So that was the time you were playing with Dele.
Uh-huh.
I mean, outside the house, in the compound, you were. I gave both of you yogurt. Dele, I started working that time. I just noticed that you were just looking at the boy like, okay, this boy. So you were not pressing him to know whether he was really somebody. You were pressing him. And that one was looking at you like, you will press him, you will push him, you will touch him like, is this real? You are you coming to compete with me? You know that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So let people, you do things together, you every and everything like that. So.
Yeah. I remember the early ages, we were very competitive, Dylan and I. And I used to always act like I was the, I used to make sure he knew I was the oldest brother. And I was like, yeah.
You made that one known to everybody from the beginning.
I remember that. Okay, so let's fast forward. We came back to Nigeria. We spent about 8 years there. Then Tunde was born.
You know, that time, before I gave a Christmas, before Tunde came, mm-hmm. I asked you for what you wanted for Christmas.
Yes.
So you said, because you have been seeing, that time, you know, you like small babies, you like babies, because despite the fact that you are a Superman, you... You're very kind and you like to take care of small babies. So you told me, I said, Tayo, I asked you, I said, Tayo, what do you want for Christmas? I said, Mommy, I want a baby. I said, do you think people get baby like that? I said, yes, that's what I want. I want baby. A baby. So, no, as I think, I said, okay, I have to give this boy, you know, the gift. That kind of so when today arrived, oh my goodness, it goes the love anybody could dream of.
Loved
him. You and Dele, you were kissing him, you were it was different from when Dele came.
I remember because I was 10 and Dele was close to 10 and Dele was close to 9, and we were all like
You people, you love Tunde, you wanted to do everything from carrying, from feeding him. Is it that you are Dele, you will sit beside me, you'll be looking at him, you will be there. I say, okay, this is baby. Probably you've seen your friends with their small brothers or that kind of.
It was
a different story with Dele.
I love kids. And Tunde, do you remember any time during that period before you went to Burkina Faso, that your first years in Nigeria? Do you remember what that was like?
No, like I remember, like, when we went to Burkina Faso, like, when I was 3 and 4. I don't remember, like, when we actually initially moved there, but I remember, like, Burkina Faso, like, I remember that. I remember the house. I remember that I used to annoy you a lot, you and Dele. I remember that, like, whenever you were studying, I used to follow you wherever you guys went. I wanted to sleep in your room. I wanted to do everything with you. I mean, I know that you guys didn't like me that much. Like, whenever
you went... We didn't like you that much?
No, because, like, whenever you went to mom and dad to complain... Uh-huh. They always sided with me, so I was like mommy's boy. So
You were mommy's boy because you didn't get punished the same way we used to get punished. But you got all the rules. But no. But I remember that. Okay, fine. So you remember when you were like 3 or 4? So when you were 3 or 4, what was it? What was it like for you? Because that was obviously your first memory. That was like for me in Sweden, and I didn't remember Sweden. Dele didn't remember Sweden, but you said you didn't remember Nigeria. So Burkina Faso, you were there, and then, you know, remember the annoying parts that we used to think of.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And like, you know, I didn't go to school like until I was 6, like until we went back to Nigeria. So like, I remember like mom teaching me everything like A, B, C, 2, 3, and I remember like learning the numbers, watching Blue's Clues a lot. I just remember like having a lot of fun.
Blue's Clues. Yeah, I remember that too. I remember that because we used to come back from school, and Yeah, we watched TV. It was the Oprah Winfrey Show. Watched a lot of Nickelodeon.
I used to bring him to your school.
Yeah, I used to bring Tunde to school.
He was very close to one of Dennis' friends. Remember the guy that lived behind our house?
Yes, Hampus, like, I think.
Hampus. He loves Hampus. So he said, Hampus.
I don't remember.
He's always asking me. He's always telling me to take him to Hampus' house.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember
and
that.
Whenever you are doing anything in school, I always bring him.
Yeah, and then we had to move back after, and then Tunde, you were in school for the first time, really, right? This is how it was. You came back to this is your first experience with Nigerian school. Dele and I were going to boarding school. Mom, what was that experience, though? We didn't talk about you in Burkina Faso. How did you feel compared to Sweden? The move to Burkina Faso compared to the move to Sweden?
It was better in Burkina Faso, you know, because Burkina Faso is an African country.
Mm-hmm.
I could go out. The weather was familiar.
Mm-hmm.
I could go to the market, I could go for shopping, I could make friends, your schools, you were older then, but I was still protective of you people. You know, remember, you normally go to one place every night for Christian something.
Well, youth group, it was for youth group, trip. Youth group, yeah.
A youth group, yeah. So it was a different story.
Yeah.
In Ouagadougou and then Tunde, you know, anytime I taught him 1 to 100.
Right.
So I had time for him. I had a lot of time for him. I was just teaching him, and he knew so many things there. So when he got back to Nigeria, it was easy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And then, so it wasn't difficult to adjust.
No. It's like all my way from home.
Ah. Okay. Yeah. But one thing I want to talk about, though, is for the move for me and Dele was initially hard. No, it was. We liked it first, but when we got to school, do you remember me feeling inferior? You remember me feeling sad, or sometimes with Dele feeling the same way?
And because you kept yourself. Yeah, and you know. So I was just there was that I was asking. I said, "Tayo, what?" I said, "Nothing." So I think you opened up a little bit to me one time. I said, "Tayo, come on, you are better than you. You are like, just like any other person. You're just like any other person. You shouldn't feel intimidated, and you should face everything." And you know. But you say,
because
I remember. Just kept behind you and you started making friends and you had a lot of friends, you know, you were loved by everybody. And
yeah, but it took a while. It wasn't until I found sports.
Yes, it would have come out earlier because you kept, you like keeping things, you know, like that kind of stuff. You know, you're thinking, you like to sort out things yourself, you like. Yeah. You know, it's like when you are thinking of something, you like to find solutions to things. Yeah. That time, you like, okay, you know. So, later, when I told you this, I think you went back, you thought about it, and you said, okay, it could be easy, too. Yeah. And when you finally opened up, oh, my goodness. It was, tile, everywhere. And then you made a lot of friends. Even the teachers, they loved you so much.
Yeah, you remember, I used to be in love with... Hilary Duff from and Beyonce, like Lizzie McGuire.
that was all boys of your age that time.
I was so in love with that. But okay, so we came back to Nigeria. The transition was actually a lot easier. I remember that. I moved to, you know, Dele and I moved to boarding school. Tunde, when we were in boarding school and you were with mom, how was that for you? Because that was your first real school experience. So what was that like?
Well, like, first moving to Nigeria was, like, really difficult for me. I mean, when I first got there, I was expecting, like, a lot of light and, you know, like, just, like, a peaceful place. But, like, it was really disappointing for me. Like, first of all, there was no electricity where we lived. So, it was really hard. And we were also living with other people.
Yes. We were living with other people. I remember that. And then, so so then the first day of school, what was that like for you then?
Oh, I cried.
You did cry.
I remember.
A week.
I was crying.
Yeah, was crying every day.
No, the first time in Nigeria. The first time. Like, you know, like, in day school, in Abe,
you went to day school. Yeah. So you cried. And why did you think you cried?
I don't know, because, like, it just felt odd, because, like, you know, until I was 6, it was my mom that was teaching me everything. Like, I was wondering, like, why would I go to a school when my mom can teach me everything? That was the way I thought.
Okay. Did you eventually get to make friends? Because we didn't spend as much time with you as we did because we were in boarding school.
So, yeah, you were in boarding.
So,
exactly.
So what is it, how did you make friends? Yeah. Did you do...
I did, yeah. I don't know. It just felt like, as time went on, like, it just felt like, it felt a little bit like home, because, like, they were, like, my people. I don't know how to explain it, but, like, I mean, I could speak to them freely. Like, they came to me. They also came to me, like, I remember, like, during breaks, we used to play soccer, like, on the field, so... Mm-hmm. I don't know, it just felt like... It felt like home in a way, a little bit, but then... Like, throughout the whole stay initially in Nigeria, the first 3 years that I was there, it wasn't really easy. So, yeah.
It wasn't easy. I remember...
Because you got body else.
What?
Yeah, apart from that, like, you know...
You people went to body else.
Yeah, I went to boarding school, yeah.
When it was going to... So...
yeah, and then...
It wasn't easy, I don't know.
But you know one thing I remember, Tuna, about you is... And Dele and I, we were always surprised by this. When we came back, your knowledge for football, soccer... I was like, where did you learn all this? Because you all of a sudden had like an encyclopedic memory of every single thing. You knew what was current. And we were like, where? How?
And yeah, because like that was one of the only fun things to do in Nigeria. Like, you know, watch soccer. And like, I love soccer. I still do now. I just watch it a lot. It just felt like a way to like release some of my boredom, some of my disappointment where I was for them.
Yeah, and then, you know, mommy is so crazy that your three sons, all of us, we all found sports as a way to connect. You know, I mean, initially it was football, soccer, and then I grew to like basketball, tennis, and everything. Dele was soccer, Tunde soccer as well. But that was the way we, you know, we found a way to connect. It was always that was the connection.
You know, part. At first, you remember one time that you. Yes, you remember one time. So, you know, there was a time I wanted to watch a soap opera, I think The Bold and the Beautiful.
Right.
So, you people were saying, that you wanted to watch football. And I said, what is wrong with this? Can't you allow me to watch? So, I went to the other room.
Yeah.
And answered that. So, as I was watching The Bold and the Beautiful, I was thinking to myself, saying, okay, I have boys. They all love soccer. The father, they love soccer. I said, okay, I better start learning about this soccer. So, I just started teaching myself, listening to you people talk, listening to news, going to Yahoo to learn. Mm-hmm. So that was how. Now, I think I can teach other mothers about top soccer.
It's true. Yeah. You do know. You know a lot about soccer now.
So that was when I started. Okay, no, I had to know about these sports, table tennis, everything. Because I have boys. My family, they're all boys. I'm the only guy around you people. So I said, okay, now. Welcome to the world of soccer. So, I got interested in soccer.
Okay. Now, this is the third move for me that we're about to talk about, and then second for you, Tunde. So, we were moving to Vietnam. I remember I had just graduated from high school. I didn't actually know what to think about Vietnam because it was a transitional period for me. I was going to university. I didn't know where I was going to go to university, first of all. And Dilly was, we were trying to figure out where we would go. But we went to Vietnam. And, you know, we had an interesting trip before we went there because we got lost in, what country? What do you get lost?
Bangkok.
Yeah. Oh, we got lost Bangkok. In Thailand. Yeah. Thailand. Yeah. Bangkok. Yeah. We got lost in Bangkok. Yeah. Bangkok. We got lost in Bangkok, Thailand.
You know what happened?
What?
Somebody was supposed to pick us up from that Thailand and take us to Nigerian house in the embassy.
Yes.
But he forgot.
Yes, I remember. The person forgot.
We're calling the embassy. So the number we had was the embassy number. So we were calling the embassy. So the next morning, he just remembered. He said, that was supposed to pick us up.
Yeah.
You remember.
Yeah. So, but we had slept in the airport. And then we slept in the airport. Yeah.
No, when he was coming to the airport, we were already inside the taxi. So we got to the embassy and I was now apologizing. I'm sorry. I said, okay, it's all good. Now we are here.
No, I remember because we slept in the airport because no one was there to pick us up. And then we were trying to call every number we could, but no one could understand us. And then the next morning, we found a cab and we were using sign language, say, Nigerian embassy. And then we went to the embassy, they thought we were like illegal people. They're like, go home. Like, we don't know you. We were supposed to be here yesterday. But that was funny, though. But I remember enjoying Thailand once we actually got there because the house we stayed in was great. But before I get to you, Mom, Tunde, I think you probably had the most fun here, Vietnam. I just have a, Watching you from afar, talk to me about Vietnam. Tell me everything.
I don't know. Like, first of all, you know, my first, like, impression of Nigeria wasn't really good. So going from, like, a place like Nigeria to Vietnam was really, like, eye-opening. It was really great for me because I just felt like everything was going to be great here. There was, like, first of all, there was, like, unlimited electricity. So it was easier for me. And at school, it wasn't that easy at first, you know, mom. Yeah, and because, like, the school is predominantly filled with white people.
Right.
Everyone there was white. And, like, when they looked at me, like, in an odd way, like, they were saying, like, who is this guy? You know, I remember, like, when I first went there, like, on the first day, I smiled at one little white girl, and then she started crying.
Wait, pause. What do you mean? I never even heard this story. She cried because you smiled at her?
Yeah, then, like, one teacher now started, like, looking at me as if I did something wrong. I don't know what I did then. I don't know. It was really hard. Like, the first year in school was really hard. I had, like, little to no friends. No, I don't know why. But, like, I sat alone during lunch and everything. But then, second year, I met one guy. I mean, his name is Martin Beek. He's from the Netherlands. He was really nice to me. I remember, like, from the first day, we became friends, best friends. I mean, we did everything together. We had sleepovers. You even saw him once when you came.
I saw him.
He was really nice. And, like, from there, I also made other friends, but Martin Beek was, like, my main friend. He was really nice to me. And everything was went up from there.
And then, okay, but what about, and then, you know, we were talking about our love for sports. You started getting into soccer, too, right? You started playing and doing...
Soccer and rugby.
Rugby!
I was good. Yeah, but I don't play rugby anymore, but then I played rugby a lot, so it was good.
No, it was good. You know, one thing I also noticed, because we only came to Vietnam during the holidays, because I was in university at this time. Dele was in high school initially. But the thing that I noticed, I always used to joke around with mom, Dele and I joke around with mom, is that she let you be more independent. Like, you were walking to school, you were doing bicycle stuff. Maybe she didn't let you be independent, but you did a lot of things that we weren't allowed to do. Because I remember at a young age, mom used to, like, shelter us and keep us from everything. I was like, mom, you're gonna let Tunde do all this, and we didn't do it. But it was good when we came back, you know, during summer breaks, just see you know, go around. But you were right about the white and black thing, though, because when Dele and I ever came to Vietnam, we would go to the gym or we would go anywhere, and people would just keep staring at us, like, because we were like the only black people were there. They would stare at us.
Never seen anyone like that in their lives.
It's not touching you. You know what I mean? That black thing will remove from your skin.
Yeah, they used to, like, touch us, like, to see if it would fade away. I remember it was so funny. But Vietnam, though, it was such a good experience.
It was so nice. It was the best.
Yeah. Why was it the best? What else was it? I mean, I know the weather was very humid, but it was, like, you know.
The culture was also amazing.
The culture was amazing, I mean, right? Yeah.
Yeah, like the Tet Festival. Their moon cakes, their rice cakes, everything was just so nice. I mean, the people were also nice. Like, even though they were, like, weird a little bit, I mean, they were still very nice to us. And even the estate that we used to live in, I mean, it was Siputra. It was such a beautiful place. I mean, you could go anywhere. We used to walk around at night.
Yes, you could walk around 12 a.m. So, you know,
it was.
It was a new city. They call it Siputra.
Siputra.
Siputra. It was the newest estate there. You know,
it was. I don't know.
I'll tell you what, Tunde. Then you know what we have to do. You know, we have to take a trip back there one day. We have to go there. We'll book a hotel, me, you, Dele, everybody, wherever we want to go. And then we'll go. No, that was good. See, that was good for me to hear.
Can I just tell you something?
What?
Kayo, can I tell you something?
Oh, yeah, please.
The time you came for holiday, that time, you know, you normally go to one gym.
Yes.
You and Dele.
Yeah.
That was the day in the morning I was about to go out. I was telling the driver So I just saw a lady talking to the driver. The lady was actually asking the driver about you people.
Really?
She was speaking Vietnam. I thought I told you. She was so the driver was saying that they've gone back to America. So when I asked the driver, I said, it was like she was asking the black handsome guy, the two guys, the six packs. So I told the driver, I said, whoa. So the driver was telling me that you know, these girls, they like black face.
They like black guys.
So I'm like, oh my. You better leave this place.
I never Okay. So I imagine if you enjoyed the place so much, let me ask mom first. How was it Vietnam for you? Because I know Tunde liked it, but the thing with expat spouses, the thing with diplomats' wives is that no one. This is why I always tell you, you're the strongest woman I know. Is you have to abandon everything for 4 years, 3 years, leave everyone you know, make new friends. So what was it like again? Because you just start get settled, then you have to move, then you get settled, then you have to move. So what was Vietnam
like? You know why it was easy for me?
Why?
I just changed. I made my children to be my focus.
Right.
That's what I normally do. Mm-hmm. I always make my children my focus. Mm-hmm. You understand? Yeah. And I like to discover the business aspect of everywhere. I like new things. I like meeting people too. But when it's, you know, and I like, you know, when you normally go to all these cocktails, you meet people, you learn about their culture and all this stuff. You know, I like going to malls. I just like the business aspect of it. You get to know so many things different, how to prepare. You know, I like keeping myself busy. I learn so many things, their food, the type of business, what do they have in the country. I discover so many stuff, the discovery, how am I going to improve on my business, you know. Those are the things I enjoy, but you right. just have to know how to shift, how to, you know, wherever you are, you make the best use of the place. And absolutely. Though you have the downside of it, but come on, you move on.
Okay. All right. So Tunde, you love the place so much. You finally found out you're going back to Nigeria. What was that like?
Wait, finding out?
Yeah. When you found out you were going back to Nigeria, that Vietnam was over. How did you feel? And what was the transition like?
You know, I had time to prepare myself for Nigeria again, because, like, you know, I knew, like, even like when we first went there, that, like, after 3 years we were going back. So, you know, I had time to prepare myself. So it wasn't hard. It wasn't that hard.
It wasn't hard.
And like moving back to Nigeria, like Nigeria, when I went back, it wasn't bad at all. Actually, at first I thought that it would be like a repeat of the first time.
Yeah.
But like I fit into Nigeria like much easier.
You fit in easier, yeah.
I fit in easier, like, yeah. So it was just better. I mean, I went to a boarding house, yeah.
Yeah, you also went to boarding school, you see? You went to boarding school like we did, okay.
Yeah, then I cried again.
You cried? Of course, you know, you cried.
I mean, like, No,
you were young, though. I mean, you were what?
Really, what were, I mean...
10? Yeah, 10? Were you 10?
Yeah, no, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, 11 or something.
11 or something, yeah.
Then it's because, like, you know, I was leaving mom and dad. Yeah. Like, it was because, like, I wouldn't see them for, like, months for sometimes. And it was really difficult the first weeks in boarding house.
Boarding school is different.
After that, I just focused on my studies from then on. It was easy for me to get to make friends there. And people were really nice to me there also. And I don't know. It was just a nice place to be. The boarding house.
Yeah, so this experience was better than the first one. I mean, I'll tell you a secret. Dele also cried his first day in boarding school. So you're not the only one. Dele cried. I remember when the first time for you to move back to Nigeria. No, second. Before Vietnam, he had cried as well. He's going to hate me, but he cried. I remember that. So, I mean, because, you know, you're going to somewhere and you're not going to be home for like months at the end, like 6 months or something. So it's different. So you said it was easier. You focus on your studies.
Yeah.
And
I call him every other day.
Called him all the time, mom.
I had to tell her to like call me like on Wednesdays and Sundays, because like she can't call me all every day.
Yeah. Mom, because if you don't tell mom to call you, she's gonna call you every day.
Yeah.
Well, but then at times I call him every other day. Just find one excuse to call him.
Yeah. And then, you know, like she visit me like every visiting day. So like anytime I'll just like call her, say, "Mommy, bring some pizza, bring KFC, bring something." It was just like, that was the time to eat everything. But then like the funny thing is that like whenever she brought the food, I didn't feel hungry anymore.
That's so crazy. And you know, Dele and I don't know, we always say this, but you are the smartest out of the three of us. So we never did as well as you did in school, because we never got first place in anything. Closest I got was third, you know, third, second. But we always wondered, where did you get this brains from? Because seriously, We never did. I mean, we weren't, you know, I mean, I always did well in school, but I was an A and B student, you know, I was just like A, B's, you know, but you were straight A, and you just started getting all this, and mom and dad would send me reports, it'd be, Tunde came first place again, and I'm like, wow, I was so proud of you guys, but you stayed there, you started to get, was making friends easier for you during this time?
By far. Yeah, it was.
Okay.
I remember, like, I think the first friend I made, we were watching a soccer match in the common room. It was Man U versus someone, I think it was Arsenal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it was the 8-2 match, the match that we beat them 8-2.
Oh, yeah. I would hate to be an Arsenal fan right now.
Some people were just crying because of that. I don't know why people were crying. It was just so funny.
Yeah, no, it was good. It's good. Yeah, for those listening right now, me and my brother Tunde, we both love Manchester United, Man U for fun. Yeah. But okay, so sports. This is always going to be the theme with us. I always tell people when we move, we found a way to connect through sports. So, mom, now this is different for you because Tunde comes back, and now instead of spending the time with him, you are alone. Dad was working in another state. You were alone. What was that like? This is like your first time.
Very, very difficult. And I just tell you, the day he left for Body House, I cried from his school till we get to the house. Uh-huh. I was just crying. So I went to sleep on his bed. I went to his room. Uh-huh. I slept there. I was smelling his dress. It was hard because the time you people left for Body House, the time you and your brother left for Body House, there was Tunde to fall back on.
Yeah.
But this time around, the three of you, gone. Oh, my goodness. I was just crying. I couldn't stop. I was just crying. So I always like to look for excuse to call his school. Uh-huh. I'll just call the housemaster. Hello, this is Tunde's mom. Can I talk to him? He was like, oh, okay. I just want to be sure whether he took his pencil, his biro. So with that, they know me in school. They said, okay, Tunde, they answered that. So with that opportunity, you know, anytime I call, they always allow me to talk to. One day I just asked the head of the teachers. I said, "Look, I'm going to ask you this favor, and I'll be very happy if you can give it to me." He said, "Okay, anything, madam, anything." I just said, "Okay, I like to talk to my son every other day." He said, "Oh, madam, you can talk to him, but just not the right time." That was I started calling every other day. No. Every other.
I told her to stop calling me. Like,
there was
every
a
day.
Time. Tunde says no. I said no. I have to talk to somebody.
She started calling me like Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, I said, no way. Too much. I don't have time every day. It's like after school, I don't know, we always had one activity, then we had prep, and there was no time for me to call her every day, so I told her that she can only call me on Wednesdays and Sundays. So, yeah.
But then, you know, as I normally do, I just buried myself in my business.
Yeah, you became an entrepreneur. I remember that. You decided to open your own business.
Now, one day they eventually have to go. So let me just face my life now.
But your business is menswear, right? Menswear.
Like a boutique, ladies' shoes, bags, menswear, ties, as men's accessories and ladies' accessories and
everyone, Dele and I, we were so proud. We were like, yes, it's time for you to take care of yourself. We wanted you to do that because we felt like you'd
sacrifice. I'm now, so now let me come back to myself.
Yes, take care of yourself because we wanted you to do that. This is very interesting. So can you tell, you know, the audience why you and dad insisted that we all went to boarding school?
Yeah, because we wanted you to really know how it is, apart from what these diplomats, you travel everywhere. Wanted you to really know your culture, learn how to live with your people, know more about your people, and be independent. Right. That was why we insisted on you people going to Body House. And you did well. Yeah. You know, in Body House, you think for yourself, you see how people behave, you see all these strange behaviors and all this kind of stuff. So we felt it was a good thing for you to just experience that.
Okay. No, yeah, I remember. I guess for me, the only hard move that was initial was Burkina Faso. When I came back to Nigeria, it was fine for me. It was good. I just enjoyed it. But I enjoyed. I wanted to like be in touch with the culture. The annoying thing though for me, Tunde, you didn't experience this, but Dele and I experienced this when we came back to Nigeria. There's people saying you're not Nigerian enough. Your accent's different. You're that. I was like, come on. It's the only passport I have. But they were like, no, you're African American. So that was annoying. But going to boarding school definitely did help, because every day we were in the culture. We ate the food. We ate everything. So I can see why you did that. Now,
me and your daddy, we went to boarding house too.
Yeah, you and dad did the same thing. So it's like a legacy type of thing. You know what I used to always think? I used to liken myself to Harry Potter. I'll be like, well, Harry Potter did it, so I'm doing it too. that's what I used to say. So, but that's great. So now, this time we're in America at this point. And today you find out that dad's last post is going to be America. The first time we are all going to be in the same continent in a matter of years. What was how did you feel, mom, first, and then I'll go to you tonight.
Tayo. By now you should know. Me, together with my boys, with my family, is the best. In fact, I would say this is the best post ever.
For you?
For me?
Yeah.
For the simple reason that I could talk to you, you know, come to where you are, and then see we are in the same continent. So I love it. That's it. I'm just having the best time of my life now, because we are all together in the same country.
Yeah. It's good. That's
why it's the best. Thanksgiving, I got to see you. Like, I'm talking to you now. You know, it's the same time. You know, we're in Nigeria and different in Vietnam. I will have to be waiting for the time. Oh, what time is it in America now? What time is it? 12 hours ahead? You know, that kind of stuff. So this time I can call you on the same time. You can talk. I can talk to you when it's in the morning, in the afternoon. So it's very easy for me. Mm-hmm. So far, this is the best post for me.
Right. What about you today?
Yeah, I was just excited when I first found out, because, you know, I've always wanted to live here. I mean, during the summer, the first time I ever came to America was a summer, like, in between, like, when we were in Vietnam. It was the best summer I've ever had in Virginia, right?
Yeah, Virginia. Yeah, I remember that.
I don't know. Yeah, I remember the extended stay hotel. I mean, yeah, I don't know. It was just best.
We were so excited.
You guys were there too. I don't know. It was just like so nice to be in America, to be with you guys, and to, you know, I don't know. I used to watch a lot of cartoons that time. I don't know. Because, like, in Vietnam, the cartoons, they're like Vietnamese, and I couldn't understand everything.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it was just the best feeling, like, to know that I was coming to live here, like, permanently. And it was just nice. And now, like, I mean, a good high school, and I do well. It's just comforting feeling right now.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, because family is here, you know, and even though we're different states, you can easily give a call, FaceTime, do that, and you wouldn't feel like like mom said. I
can wake up and come to New York.
Huh? What?
That's how it is for me. I can wake up tomorrow morning and say, oh, nah, I want to start. I'll just come there.
No, it's good. No, I'm glad. You know, and the reason I wanted to do this, because people have always been asking, What's the Roxanne family like? We've listened to all that. I really want to know what that dynamic is. And I always tell you, mom, more than anyone, how would you describe the three of us? Because we're all different and we're all similar, but we're all different at the same time. So how would you describe me? First, how would you describe Tunde? How would you describe Dewey?
Okay. First of all, let me just tell the whole world what you people are to me. My world.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
My best friend. My everything. Okay. You are very energetic, easygoing, very kind. You are a leader. You are a born leader, uh-huh. And you are very nice. You like to put yourself on the line for people, you know, and you don't expect anything back. You're very, sometimes I tell you, no, you have to make a stand, but you're just nice. You are very positive somebody. So is also your brother, and you are a very good listener. Because, you know, whenever I'm feeling down, whatever, I just say, Tayo. And you already say, okay, mom, what is it? Even if I'm annoying, even if I called you at the wrong time, say, Tayo, mom, what is it? And you will just keep quiet while I'm talking, blah, 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 blah. You will listen. And you now say, okay, mommy, okay, it's okay. Okay. And you even give me your talent. Mommy, what do you think we should do now? That is very suiting for me, you know.
Yeah.
Then Dele is the quiet type, very kind, quiet, and a good listener too, and you know, you people are very similar.
But he's creative though. He's creative.
No. When you're talking about creativity,
yeah,
it's me. And you are the brain type. You do, you. I think you anything readable you want to read, and you are very. Yes, and you have this energy. I just can't describe where the energy comes from. You are always morning, afternoon, the same energy. You want to be there. And I'm just like, one day when you get married, that woman must be a very, very, very lucky woman. Because yeah, I think, I should proud to that. All of you got the caring, you know, you have a caring parents and that kind of stuff. You are very, very nice. I would love to see the lady that will
thank you. Mom. But we got it. Okay. And then, yeah, what about Tunde?
Okay, just tell about Dele. Dele is is very creative. And then, you know, he's very creative, kind. You are similar in one way or the other. And you know the small boy, the Tunde. I think it takes more from you and from Dele.
Mm-hmm.
And combines the two together.
Yeah. He definitely has both, but that
he has both.
Tunde is, I don't know, I feel like he's going to be this genius of, okay, he says things, he always surprises me, I'm like, how did you know that? But he has an encyclopedic memory. He memorizes.
Let me tell you one thing, I've told you this before, if you remember.
Right.
I said that you gave your brothers a good legacy, because if you are not a good brother, if you are not smart, I don't think, because they all look up to you, one way or the other. Yes, and yeah, I told you that you are a genius in your own way, because during that time, let me tell you, the way you are referring to Tunde now, your classmates, people are referring to you like that, but you know people cannot be the same,
right?
You understand? You are a genius to be just like you felt that you are feeling that, okay, your brother is a genius and that kind of stuff.
Oh no, there's no question. Tunde is the smartest rocks it. That's a fact. But
special.
It's the truth though. It's the truth. But I think it's interesting, because I always tell people, mom, in Nigerian culture, one of the things that you have as the oldest brother, or oldest boy, oldest, and you're going to different family, you're traveling, is you can't mess up. I always used to feel that, like, you can't mess up, that the pressure, yeah, people are looking after you, because your parents will brag about you, people are going to ask how your family is doing, and they're not there. So I always used to feel that. Like growing up, okay, I can't do anything bad. I have to do this. So, but you know, like you said, we always used to talk all the time, because you used to tell me everything, and we'll call and we keep in contact. And you say, make sure you're being a good example to your brother. So that was always ingrained in me early. So I remember that for sure. Yeah. I definitely tried, but we all got it from you, though, mom. It was you and dad. All the teachings. I used to tell my friends that I learned a lot from, because you made me like soap operas. I remember we used to watch Bold and Beautiful, Days of Our Lives, and I had a crush on that one.
All My Children.
Yeah, I had a crush on Chloe, the girl from Chloe, All My Children, yeah, the Chloe. But I remember when we would watch these shows, you'd be like, Tayo, Dele, Tunde, don't be like this person, don't be like that person. And that always stuck with us, because you use those shows to help us. And yeah, so we're definitely very grateful. Like I said, the strongest woman I know is you. I always love you from the bottom of my heart. Love you, Tunde. Tunde,
you.
The best little brother. Best little. You're the best youngest brother in the world. And then Dele is the best middle brother in the world. So,
thank you.
Very, very.
You're the best.
thank you. But no, I just, as we close here, I just want to ask you all. So, mom, what advice would you give to other diplomatic wives and people that are married to people that travel a lot? What would you give the wives?
Simple. Just go out to that country, learn what they are doing, they behave like them, and have the best time of your life.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah. Yep. And what about you, Tunde?
Me, I think the best thing that you can do is to embrace change. You have to be able to, like, you know, adapt to different places. You have to be able to, you know, fitting. It's not always going to be easy, but you have to, like, learn what they do. You have to be able to, like, look at what they do and, like, observe them. You also have to be able to, like, not get too attached to any place, because you're going to move a lot, for sure. All right. So you have to be able to be flexible. And that's the thing. Yeah, just be flexible.
Love it. You guys just killing it with the advice today. Well, thank you all. We got Tunde Roxon, ladies and gentlemen. and my mom, Mrs. Roxton. Thank you all. Thank you so much for doing this. This means a lot. You can't be kissing on there, Mom. What are you doing?
All right. Love you. Love you, Tayo.
Love you, Mom. Love you.
All right, I'm joined here by my amazing brother, Daily Roxton. And now I just got done talking with Mom and Tunde, so I'm definitely glad to have you on. And just to give you some background, we were talking about the whole process, basically what happened when we moved to each country. You and I, we had a unique experience because we shared a lot of these journeys together. You know, you were born about a year and 2 months after I was, but still, we shared a lot of our time together. So welcome to the show. Thank you for coming on, man.
It's a pleasure, man. Thanks for having me on. This is kind of interesting. It's kind of weird, though, because I never thought I would be my older brother's going to be interviewed, but the pleasure is mine. By the way, it's Daily Roxton. People can call me Dele or Dele, whatever, as long as you get the name right, D-E-L-E. But it's a pleasure to be on.
Hey, you know, the pleasure is mine. It is weird. I've got to be honest. I mean, we've tried to, like, record this several times, and it's always awkward because I'm like, you're my brother. Well, you're not a guest. I can't think of you like that way. But, no, but I think, you know, for the 100th episode, a lot of people have been asking. They want to know, essentially, what makes the Roxton family and how we grew up. So let's basically move past all the early stages because we covered that with Mom and talk about, you know, when school started. So we moved to Burkina Faso, right? That's what I want to start with. We moved to Burkina Faso. Can you tell me what that experience was like for you? Because we had just left Nigeria. I think you were in fifth grade at the time, or fourth grade. Yeah. What was that for you like?
You know, I'm trying to remember that, but I do remember the feeling I had when I think Mom told us that we're going to leave Nigeria. It was like, wow, we're going to go to another country. I know it was within like Africa, but it was West Africa. It was Burkina Faso. And we got a little bit of knowledge of what was going to finally fly in a long time. I mean, we spent most of, I think it was 8 years we spent in Nigeria together before we had actually been on a plane. So I think the experience for me was like, wow, we actually get to leave this country that we called home to go to another place and call that place home. But I think the main thing that was going through my mind was like, hey, starting a new life again, going to get to meet new people. I think we were also told that we were going to go into an American school, but that was like a big thing for me because I think back then my idea of an American school was everything that we watched on TV. Like there's going to be cliques or stuff like that. But I think the experience was great. I was excited. I was nervous at the same time. And I was also scared. But
you're scared? Overall. I didn't know you were scared. What were you scared about?
I was scared about adjusting. You know, I was like, will people accept me? Stuff like that. But, you know, overall, it was overwhelming. At the same time, it was good.
Okay, now I want to talk about that low point. So what were the low points when you finally moved? We got there, you know, I've said this in previous episodes. When I first moved, it was initial high for me, right? I was excited, bam, bam, bam. And then I started feeling inferior at one point. And I remember I would come back home. Sometimes I would cry. I wish I would have like softer hair or something. I was like, oh, these are like different sorts of people. I was like, what am I going to do? But I don't know if we really talked about your experiences growing up, because, you know, I don't know. I think I was more vocal about mine than you were.
Yeah, you know, I was more of the quiet child. I kept to myself. I mean, you and I, we grew up together, but, you know, I shared some stuff. I shared mostly everything with you, but I was more calm, and I kept it to myself. But I was scared in the sense that I didn't know what people were going to think about me. I didn't think – I grew up thinking that girls were superior to guys for some reason.
Wait, you, like, you grew okay, up thinking that what?
I thought the girls were superior to men. I don't know why. It was just some weird thing I had growing up. I was scared to approach a girl. And but no, I mean, I was had low points because, I mean, I was like, no, this is cool. I'm going to an inter-American system. Never been heard about or been in this system before. But how are people going to accept me as an African in the American system? Are they going to welcome me? I mean, sometimes I was a little bit nervous because I just didn't know what I was going to say. I was like, my accent is different. People are going to be like, huh, this guy's weird. They're going to look at me different. They're going to treat me different because of the way I speak. But, you know, it took some time. But eventually, you know, I had to welcome open arms when I first got there. And funny thing is, I wasn't the only African there. And when I saw that there were other Africans there who they accepted, I was like, okay, this should be fine. All I have to do is just make sure I do well in classes and get on a sports team.
Yeah.
There's something to keep me going after school, after school activity, something like that. Yeah, but those are my low points.
Yeah,
not knowing how people are going to accept me.
It's funny though, because I often say, you know, you and I, we both share a love for sports, right? So I one of the things I said was one of the first ways I connected with people was through sports. It was learning basketball, soccer, tennis, and I remember vividly you was joining the soccer team, and I think I remember you fitting in into with your friends. There was, you know, there was a guy called Peter Barlin that you used to be friends with, and he was like one of the best soccer players. And you would, you know, you go after school, you practice, and you do that. But was sports really key into making sure that you?
Yeah. This is gonna sound funny, but I thought, you know, I was like, listen, if people don't accept me just because I'm regular students and I go to classes, if I had something that I was good at apart from, you know, like my if I'm good at a sport, people are gonna watch me, they're gonna see me do good. They're going to accept me that way. So, I mean, I love soccer. So, that was my main thing to focus on. And I fell in love with it because I had a guy in my class who was one of the best soccer players on the team. And magically, I made the team. Not saying I'm not good. I mean, I wasn't as good as him. But I made the team and he was my friend. And it was kind of like a role model for me. Don't get me wrong, man. You're was my role model too. But I was like, the fact that he's a popular guy, he's great at soccer, and we were in the same soccer team, I was like, what can I do to be like this guy? But, sports was definitely an open door for me to believe that people would accept me. And, sports, I love sports in general. So, I mean, that was the only sport I played, soccer. Right. And I believe long distance, something like that. But, yeah. But, no, that was that was a great one.
And then, you know, it's very, very interesting. It's tricky because it's a new environment. It's new people, new languages. You know, you're a foreigner. You're trying to figure out what accent you should talk with, how to approach girls. Trust me, I was the same way. But which is interesting. You actually got a girlfriend. You got a girlfriend before I did, though. So let's not pretend like you had problems.
Hey man, what can I say? Man, I had a way with words. But no. Yeah, I remember that. I got a girlfriend. She was an American in Africa. We had classes together, and she was also a soccer player. So that would guess. Like I said, sports helped me out a little bit. But, you know, we connected through having the same classes, same homeroom, seeing each other, like, every day. And then one day, I was like, you know what? The funny way of this happened was we used Pig Latin. She's like, you want to be my boyfriend, bae? And this was back in the day of Yahoo Messenger chatting online. And I said, yes, I'm going to be your boyfriend, bae. And then next day in class, funny thing is it only lasts like a week. It's all right, you know, it's young love. What did I know back then?
Wait. I thought it was longer than a week. It was a week?
It was a week.
So you guys, you're boyfriend bae and boyfriend gay. That's Pig Latin for boyfriend and girlfriend. And that was a week.
Girlfriend gay.
Girlfriend gay. All right.
That was what you call it, yeah. But no, yeah, man. It was a good times, but a good 1 week.
Okay. Now, take me back to the time when you found that we were moving back to Nigeria. What was that like for you?
And at the same time, I was excited because I was like, listen, I've been exposed to the American society now. I mean, even though it was in Africa, it was an American school. I was like, you know, I'm excited because when I go back to Nigeria, I'm going to have so much knowledge of how it is, even though I've never been to America. I felt that people were going to be like, wow, okay, you were exposed to the American system. And it's funny because we had already picked up an accent. I mean, if you stay in a certain place for a certain amount of time, your environment, you have to cater to environment. And I picked up the accents because I was surrounded by different people, Americans, Germans, or everything. And somehow, a lot of people always say, your accent is not American. It's a mix. I was like, yeah, you know what? Just call me international. I'm an international man. But I was excited. I was like, I'm going back to Nigeria to see my old classmates. And they're going to be like, this guy's different from, was it 4 years to spend there? Different from how I first met him. But I was excited to bring back the knowledge that I had being surrounded around the American system.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what was my...
Yeah, and then we went to boarding school. We went to boarding school together. Tell me what that was like for you. Because we were in the same school, but you were, you know, we were separated. We were in different houses. So it was kind of like Harry Potter, right? You know, I was in,
yeah, it was funny. Boarding school, I mean, this is us being separated from our parents. I mean, we've always been going to day school, but at the same time, I was nervous and excited. But boarding school was a great experience because, you know, let's not even lie about this. You were popular when you came back because you remember you were the head boy. and everyone associated me as that is Tyra's brother. That's Tyra's brother. And I was, but everyone loved us because I think in Nigeria that, well, in Nigeria in general, most people are used to like this British backgrounds, and it's mostly British or Nigerian. And the fact that we had an accent, people thought we were Americans. And I was like, no, I'm American. So it was cool. People were always like, give us attention. Like, oh, man, you sound so good the way you talk, man. Man, what's up? Where you from? I'm like, you know, yeah, man. You good American? You go to American school? I was like, yeah, I was there for 4 years, blah, blah, blah. You know, I kind of liked the attention. And, yeah, it was an easy adjustment. I mean,
yeah, granted, you know. Yeah, it's interesting you say that. Because it was we were sort of elevated to a place where we were perceived as African Americans, but we weren't African Americans.
Exactly.
But at the same time, we were also not seen as Nigerians enough. They're like, people would question us whenever we said anything Nigerian.
Exactly.
Like, you're not Nigerian enough. And you know, I can't lie, that bothered me. I know you said I was popular, but you yourself know I wasn't comfortable with being popular, because it was weird for me, because I had just come from Burkina Faso where I was trying to fit in, and all of a sudden people are looking at me in a different way. So yeah, I was. Yeah, I still had the awkward moments. I mean, I was, you know, I was very scared of girls up until like I was 17. I used to like stammer around girls.
Exactly, I told you. I just think they were superior for some reason.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, for some reason I still had that. Even though people were like, oh, Tayo, you're like that, but talk about it. Did he annoy you as much as it annoyed me when people say you're not Nigerian enough? You're like, oh, what do you know? Why are you trying to listen to Nigerian music? What do you know? You're American.
Yeah, I mean, it bothered me, but then, you know what, it bothered me a lot, but they were justified when they said, you know what, you weren't even born in Nigeria, you were born in Sweden. I was like, that's not my fault. I was like, I was born in Nigeria, but then I was born in Sweden, but I moved to Nigeria right afterwards. I was like, I can't help the fact that my parents were in a different country when they had me, you know. But I was like, listen, okay, you know what actually made me proved them wrong, because there was a Yoruba class. We're Nigerians, right? Our ethnicity is also Yoruba. So I showed them when I actually got an A in the class. I was like, listen, let me show you that I can still be a Nigerian. I can have an accent, but that doesn't mean I've forgotten my heritage.
Yeah.
Also, we also had like more people look up to us because the fact that we could speak French.
Yeah.
You know? That we went to a French country in Africa, but still we came back and we were acing the classes. People were like, okay, these guys are something else, you know? I mean, it was a good time in boarding school, man.
I think for me it wasn't until I was 17 that I fully embraced who I was. You know, I was like, I just, you know, I came to terms with not having to fit in with people. I was like, you know, I'm international, like you said. You know, I speak French, speak English. And my accent is somewhat elusive, you know, sort of switches sometimes to back and forth. And I was like, you know, this is me. I can't keep catering to everyone. Otherwise, I'm not going to be myself. But you said something interesting. And, you know, when you were, you said you took, for the audience, Yoruba is a tribal language in Nigeria. So Nigeria, we speak English as the official language, but there are over 300 different languages. And the three main tribes are Yoruba, Hausa, and Igbo. We are from the Yoruba tribe, so one of the languages we were allowed to take in class was Yoruba. And Dele was saying that he passed one of the courses, and he wanted to show that as proof, like, see, I'm actually Nigerian enough. And it was interesting.
That's right, man.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, no, but I think it was, yeah, for me, once I got to 17, I didn't care anymore. And a lot of things started to happen then. I was like, you know what, this is me, I'm fine. I think I was around the same time I became head boy and student body president. So I was like, it sort of worked out that way, where I became comfortable with who I was.
Now, you guys, you don't know, he was a head boy means he was the head of the whole school when it came to discipline. Like, there was a principal, there was vice principal, then they had one guy in the student body who was in charge of everything. And instilled the rules. That was my brother. He was the head boy.
Hey, well, I didn't abuse the rules though. So at least I know that much. I was.
You instilled. You made sure the rules are not. I said, it was a good head boy.
No, I don't know if people say that. But back to this. So now again, we were moving again. This time we were moving to Vietnam. I want to know what the first thing that came to your mind was when you heard Vietnam. You're like, okay, I just graduated and you were in 11th grade or 11th or 10th? 11th grade or 10th?
I was finishing up 10th grade.
Yeah. Okay, you finished in 10th grade and I just graduated, and you heard from dad and mom, we're moving to Vietnam. What did you think?
Oh, man, Vietnam. You know, the funny thing is, I look it up right online. I was like, Vietnam, all right, Vietnam, Vietnam. I was like, all right, wait, hold up. Vietnam, it's not bad. And I was like, okay, it's different. At that time, I was like, okay, it's different. You get to leave again in Nigeria. What's this going to be like? I was like, well, you know what? I'm ready for the next chapter in my life. I mean, I felt bad because at this time, people already, because I believe it was the, after you finish 10th grade and you start 11th grade, you start getting nominated for prefects, which were like head boy, assistant head boy, assembly prefect. And people were, you know, hinting that I was going to be like a head boy or assistant head boy. I was like, yeah, just after my brother's footsteps. I was kind of sad because I had to leave. I was like, I never got to find out if I was actually nominated for that. But at the same time, I was happy. He's like, you know what? God, you know, everything happens for a reason. God, you know, who am I to say this is probably a blessing? So let me just put my foot down, let God take control. But I was happy, man. I was like, you know, it's a different country. It's Asia, different continent. We've never been there. So let's see what's in store for us. So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it was funny when we first told our friends, they made fun of us. It was a joke. They're like, oh, Vietnam War. It was interesting. But I don't know if I was excited or nervous. I wasn't nervous or anything. I was just sort of anxious to take the next step because it was a transition period for me. I had just graduated. I wanted to know where I was going to university. I wanted to know because Dad told us that we were both going to America, then we would come to Vietnam for holidays. Now this,
yeah, when he said America, I was like, you know what? Yeah, I'm ready, man. I was like, I've never been to the US.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
Yeah, we had never been to the US. And you know, that was the craziest part, because up until that point, we were perceived as the Americans on campus, or like the Americans in high school. And we always used to tell our classmates, guys, we might have a somewhat American accent, but we've never actually been to America, right? We had never actually been to America. And then we finally got the chance to be in America, and I still remember that first week. It was Dad that took us. Well, I remember the process. Before we got there, I almost didn't get my visa to get into school, so we were freaking out the last week of school. We thought that maybe he had missed the window, and it was like, I'm not even going to get to go to America. But then when we finally got to America, it was interesting, because I don't know about you, but for me, I felt a sudden sense of calm. I fit in probably easier than I fit in any other country prior to before, just because I felt like I was, you know, people already assumed that I was African American, and no one, you know, everyone was always surprised that I'll tell them that I'm Nigerian and be like, and they would question me on that. But then I started saying, you know what, I want to embrace my Nigerianness more. You know, even though people in Nigeria thought I wasn't Nigerian enough, I'm like, you know what? I'm Nigerian. I'm going to say it. What did you think?
I remember when I first came, we came to San Diego. It was Dad, you and I. And we landed in D.C. and then we went to, took a bus or something to New Jersey and then drove all the way to Lynchburg. I remember, man, when I first came, well, I had to stay with for me, it was different because I was still in high school. I had to stay with like a host family. And, you know, I mean, they accepted me easy because, you know, it's just they've been doing this for a while. You know, they take students from different countries and house them for a whole school year. So I think for me, I was just like, okay, this is going to be interesting. But again, the way that I fit in right before school started was joining the soccer team. And the funny thing about this is that the Africans on the team were the best players. There was two Ghanaians and me, a Nigerian. And I made the team easily. And people were like, who is this new guy? I mean, some people felt a little bit of a threat. It's like, who is this guy? We just came from who knows where, and he's joining our team, and he's trying to... I was like, all right, cool. This will be fun. Yeah, first day of class was quite interesting for me because, you know, it was the first day of school was like, you know, you have to introduce yourself in front of everyone in the class. Say, my name is Deli Rocks, and I'm from Nigeria, blah, blah, blah. And people... the fun thing is I had a little bit of an accent. Not an American accent. You know, prior to what I said, I was like, you know, people thought that we were Americans. But my accent did not sound American compared to anyone. I had a little bit of British because I was still surrounded by British people back in Nigeria. So I was like, my name is Deli Rocks, and I'm actually from Nigeria. But people looked at me and was like, what? But no, it was calm because it was calming because the only people I knew were people on my soccer team. So if I saw them in the hallways, I was like, hey, man, what's up? You know, other than that, and then... I just got to meet my classmates, but it was a good feeling. I was like, so this is what it feels like to be in America.
Yeah, you know, we had talked about what our perception of America was pretty much what we saw in movies. I know mm-hmm. at that point, yeah. one of my favorite movies was She's All That, you know, 10 Things yeah. I Hate About You. You know, I am the guy that likes romantic movies. I know you like your horror movies. But yes, that was like one of the things that I always wanted to do. And I love the Disney movies. You know, Mary-Kate and Ashley were popping then at the time. We were like, I wonder if we'll have the same experience. But I didn't get that. You got that. Was it like that for you? I know it was.
No. Actually, it was different.
Yeah.
It was different. Because, like I said, the only thing that I remember was the same was there were cliques. Like, everyone had their own clique. Uh-huh. There were the soccer players, or there were football players, or the sports players. There were actually the geeks. And, yeah, I fit in as a soccer player. Well, I fit in with the sports guys. Not the jocks, but, you know, the ones who was on the team. And I wanted to branch out, too, and I was still trying to find exactly where I fit in. So I would talk to the soccer team after practice or before practice as we're going there. And I would try to mingle and just talk to people. One of the funniest things for me was I got a girlfriend within the first week. I know it sounds crazy, but, you know, I remember.
Dude, you're always quick with the ladies, man. You always got the girls before I did. So don't even try and hide that, man.
Yeah, I mean, it was something for me to do after, because she was 2 grades younger than me. So after I finished school, if I didn't have practice, I would go walk her to her locker or something like that, and then I'll get to meet her friends. And I was like, all right, cool. And they were like, oh, she's dating an upperclassman, that kind of stuff. You know, I kind of. To where, you know, I felt like the jock or something, and the ladies were like looking at me, oh my gosh, she's dating that guy, oh, he's special. So it was a little bit of refreshing for me. Refreshing. It was very refreshing for me to have that kind of mini popularity my first school.
Yeah, I remember this is when we first had our first argument. Like, because I remember, I think you, and this wasn't what I was trying to do, but I remember when I was in Nigeria, I guess you had sort of felt under my shadow. A little bit, I guess, with the popularity.
Yeah,
I was
like,
you didn't admit this to me until later. You were like, you didn't like people calling you Tayo's brother. And then you felt like this was a clear separation for us, where I was in college and you were in high school, and this was your chance. So you were like, this is what you're going to do, and then...
Yeah, this was a chance for me where I was the only Roxanne in the building.
I remember that. I was always telling you that I never... Because I was never comfortable with... I'm still not. I like, you know, praise, and all these stuff bothered me, but... So I was like, I don't know why you felt that way, because I've never actually been comfortable with it. But so you got this chance to actually be popular and that. And then you spent, 2 years in high school in America before you moved? Or is it two
or
1 year?
2007, two years, 2007, 2009. And then I started college, did that for 3 years. But okay. No, I still remember. It was the same process too, when I started college, because I remember I was like, okay, you're going to show me around campus. And you like, you know what, yeah. It's like, you know, just mingle around. And the funny thing is, I mingled around. I met people there was this Facebook group where people were like class of 2009 who were going to Liberty University, meet up on there, write on the wall, hey, I'm going to be this place on campus. And then I met people without your help. I was like, you know what, I'm going to be my own person and see if I can branch out and meet people. I was like, you know what? What's it gonna hurt? I mean, what's the worst that's gonna happen? Hey, I'm the guy you saw on Facebook. And it was easy for me because, once again, I went to the sports arena. I went to the indoor soccer field. I met people there, and I was like, okay, cool. You want to go grab lunch? We all went together because this is our first time in college. We all wanted to stay together because we didn't know where we were going. And that way, when we stayed together, we met other people. And honestly, it was a great experience.
Yeah, so. I remember feeling nervous a little bit because up until that point, in Nigerian culture, the oldest... Because I am the oldest, your parents tell you, you know, because they were in Vietnam. I was the only, it was only me and you in the U.S. and Tunde was in Vietnam as well. And your mom and dad would tell me, watch him. And I always felt this responsibility, but you had grown so independent. And this is part of one of the things that happens with TCK is when you start finally getting your independence and what you do with that. And I think you finally, you were just, you know, you were just discovering yourself and doing that. And I was like, ah. I was, I was like really, really, really nervous for that. But then, you know, you came into your own. You really grew up you know, to find young man, and then you started, you know, you started using sports to make friends. You graduated pretty well in school, and then you, and then we definitely separated after that. Because after you graduated, we lived together for about a year or two. How long did we live together?
A year. You stayed a year.
Yeah, we lived together in Virginia for a year.
I graduated 2012.
Yeah, 2011.
Yeah, a year.
2011. And then I left in 2013, I think. Yes, I left in 2013.
Yeah, so about, I graduated.
But you were still in school, so you came back. Yeah, I was living with two other people at the time, and then when you graduated, we lived together for a year. Yeah. And then yeah, once that happened, can you talk about, you know, what it was like? How did you use your background to help you get a job? Because that's one of the most frustrating things for international students.
Yeah. You know, actually, you know what? It was actually a plus. My background helped me out a lot. I'm in college. I was a broadcasting major, and my minor was advertising and public relations. But broadcasting for me was, I was putting myself out there. I remember I was actually on a radio show, college campus radio show, 99.9 FM Delight, and you know, I was trying to get my voice out there. I was like, you know what, I have a good voice. Well, I was told I had a good voice, so I use that as I was like, you know, they don't have to see my face, but they can hear my voice. They're gonna love what I have to say, and that's cool. And also, I hosted a TV show on campus.
Right, I remember that.
Yeah, I was a host. Some of the girls, she was actually from New York. She had an accent, and they said they wanted diversity, so they put me, an African guy. They liked the fact that my accent was a little bit different. They were like, okay, my name is Deli Roxon, blah blah blah. They're gonna put you out there. So we did this show for like a semester. The show was shown around campus on the Liberty University channel, and was also shown on Thomas Orr channel, which is known for you guys that don't know what Thomas Orr is, but it's actually a church right there, and it shows to the public. I don't know, probably over 1,000 people will watch the show. So I use that to help me get a job, in the sense that I did an internship with ABC 13. You guys know ABC 13 TV show, like a TV network, and they said that they saw some of my clips on YouTube.
Wow.
Me hosting the optional YouTube show. I'm like, you know
what?
I didn't
know that.
So before I already went for the interview, they're like, yeah, we saw some of your stuff. You look good on camera. You're great on camera. You have that presence. I was like, okay. And that helped me out a little bit. And I guess, you know, I came in the interview, answered the right questions. And before I knew it, after I finished my internship, I got a job as a TV news? The morning editor and video journalist. So, being the third world actually helped me out a lot.
Yeah. Being the third culture kid did, because then you started to, like I said, I remember when you started to come into your own, you started just using all the skills you learned, because you were easy, you're adapting to many environments. You started adapting quickly. You started using your international background to your advantage. Like, people say, well, I knew that. And you'd get into all these interesting conversations that people would never initially you've thought of. And then the visa, then ABC decided not to sponsor you for the visa, right?
You know what's crazy about that? They did not. They had promised me at the beginning that they were going to sponsor me. But I'm thinking now, maybe they didn't understand what that meant. But no, some companies don't like to do that because they feel like they have to pay. That's the rule. I guess ABC didn't want to pay for me. But it was a blessing in disguise, because the same day that they told me that they weren't going to sponsor me, I believe I had 2 months or two months, was it 2.5 months or something left before I had to make a choice. So I decided to reach out to my best friend, Chris Ronk, and I told him that day. I was like, yeah, man, this is what happened. So he was asking me, what are you going to do? I was like, I don't know, man. Maybe go back to school or try and find a job that would sponsor me in L.A. That was my plan. I wanted to go to Los Angeles. I don't really want to go to Los Angeles. And he's like... and then he contacted me like a couple of hours after. Would you like to work for us, use your video skills, and be like, as part-time? I was like, really? And then that same night, I met with his dad, and he's like, yeah, we can sponsor you. He actually told me that one other person, a Canadian, was actually filling the same form as the marketing director. And he's like, yeah, it's the same thing. He's like, we'll sponsor you. Wow. I was like, wow.
Yeah, I remember that time very vividly, because I remember we were all nervous, and I was like, come on, we got to come up with a creative way to do something, a creative way to solve this, because as international students in, you know, United States, you have only so much time that you can spend.
But yeah, you adapted once again. Like I said, in the third culture skills there, and even if it wasn't even just TCK skills, it was just naturally you just went into survival mode. You're like, because you and I, we've gone through many visa struggles as you know, kids of diplomats, and I'm like, oh gosh, again, we have to get another visa. We didn't meet this paperwork, blah blah blah. So we just saw this as another one. But you in particular, I remember when ABC came to you and we only had like 2 months left for you to find a job. You're like, oh my gosh, what are we gonna do with? and then you came here. But no, this is good. And then it's worked out so far, because now, you know, it's been two years or so since. How long have you been working with the company now?
Over two and a half years. It's approaching. It'll be 3 years in February.
Yeah, so 3 years, and you've basically been promoted every year. And that's the reason I wanted to bring that up is, even though that was a low moment, you know, it was either you were going to go back to Nigeria or somehow find a way to get a master's or find another way to get a job. You know, you reached out to your network. You weren't afraid to ask for help, which is very different from the way you were initially before, because you said you were quiet before growing up. And now you're like,
yeah,
I got to think. I got to ask. So this is good. I just wanted to give the audience more of a chance, because they've been asking about the brothers and the mom and the dad. They wanted to know who else is in Roxy family. So I think it's, thank you for spending time doing that. But before I let you go, I want to ask you, this is what I always ask. I ask a lot of people this. How do you use your difference to make a difference? I know you didn't know I was going to ask you this question.
Rocking it out on me. My advice to people out there to how to use your difference to make a difference is actually, no matter who you are, you know, everyone has that special skill that makes them different. So, I mean, for me, the way I use my difference to make a difference is I have certain skills in the media aspect of, I'll just talk a bit about what I do in my job, is I'm able to create a story with a video. I can take something out of nothing and make it something. That makes sense. I can take anything out of nothing and make it something. I work for Runkin Pratt in the Living Communities. I do the videos. I do the commercials. But with that, I'm able to film videos that people can watch and then take back that as, wow, my grandparents of this senior living community, they're able to see their testimony, they're able to see that their families are still living life to the fullest. So whatever skill you have, maybe it's beatboxing or maybe it's soccer, you can use that to make a difference by being the best at what you can do. You know, I mean, if you have a talent with something, make sure you perfect it. That way people can say, okay, he's not just a talent, but he's actually great at doing it. So when people see that you're using that difference to make a difference, they're going to be like, okay, what can I do in myself? What can I better in myself that's going to make me stand out?
Right. No, I love it. You're basically talking about make yourself indispensable, use the skills that you have already, and video has always helped you. Yeah. Video has always you've always been the creative one, so video has always helped you in everything. And
the fun part about the video is when I worked at ABC 13, don't get me wrong, I mean, I got experience. Now I'm working at Runkin Pratt. I've gotten more experience than I ever thought that I'd get before. I mean, my work is better. I shoot better videos. We shoot better quality videos. I mean, and the funny thing is, I'm never complacent. You know, you might think you're in a great hire. Right now, I think I'm good. But I've looked back in the past 2.5 years I've been working with them. The work that I did back then was nothing compared to what I did now. You know, so what I've done over the years is I've looked back and see, okay, that was the difference. How can I be better? So I use my difference, which was my work in the past, to make a difference by making it better every year.
Striving for the best.
And striving for the best, man. That's what I'm saying. So just use whatever talents. Everyone has a talent out there. I mean, it might take you a while to find it, but at the end of the day, you keep searching, you're going to find that road. But yeah.
All right.
That's what I could give back.
There you have it, man. That's my amazing brother. Daily Roxon, or he likes to go by Daily Roxon. Originally, he was called Daily.
It's like a deli sandwich.
So, thank you for coming on the show, Daily.
Hey, it's a pleasure.
Boom.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to use your difference to make a difference, as well as for show notes, head over to www.uidmag.com. Till next time, go out and make an impact in your world.